holding on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday a braisa. We were discussing like this. The Mishnah had said that if a person shechts the Korban Pesach and has chametz in his possession, or we said if there's chametz in the possession of anybody else involved with the Korban Pesach, then there's a loisa say involved. We said a few different opinions. Do we mean that the Rambam holds that only the one who actually has the chametz is the one who's over on the lav? Rashi understands that it means that everybody who's involved with that Korban Pesach is over on the lav. Obviously, they're only getting malchus if they have asra for it. Tosfos had said only the one who's shochet or only the one who's zodik. Anyway, the point is, so Rav Papa had also said that also the Kohen who burns the fats of the Korban Pesach on the Mizbeach is also going to be involved, is also going to be chayev on this lav if he or any of the people involved with the Korban Pesach has chametz in their possession. And we learned a braisa. The last thing we said was we learned a braisa that supports what Rav Papa said. Specifically, for our purposes, what's important is the braisa mentioned two things. Number one, it said that also the one who burns the fat is chayev, which agrees with what Rav Papa says. It also mentioned that if the Kohen does malika on a bird during that time and he has chametz in his possession, then he's not over on anything. So as we said, you know, you could have a case of a mechusar kipurim, somebody who has yet to bring a chatas in order to be allowed to eat kodshim, in this particular case, the Korban Pesach. In the case of a zav or a zava, their chatos is always going to be a bird. In the case of a woman who gave birth, if she's poor, her chatos is also going to be a bird. And in the case of a mitzvah, also, if he's poor, then his chatos is going to be a bird. In the case of the yoledis and the mitzvah, if they're rich, then their chatos is going to be an animal. That's a different matter. Anyway, so that was the braisa mentioned, those two points. Number one, that the one who burns the fat is over on lo sishchat al chametz dam zivchi if he has chametz in his possession. And number two, that on the other hand, if a kohen does malika of a bird during that time, then he's not, and he has chametz in his possession, then he's not over. So now the Gemara says, Uraminhi, I have a contradiction on that braisa. Another braisa says, "Hashochet is a Pesach ala chametz over beloisase." That if somebody shechts the Korban Pesach and he or anybody from the group has chametz in their possession, then he's over on a loisase. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afatomid, and again, as in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says not only the Korban Pesach but also the Korban Tomid, as we'll see soon on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph why Rabbi Yehuda holds that way. So the Chachamim answered him that no, this din applies only to the Korban Pesach, not like you say to the Korban Tomid. And the Braisa continues, Amasai. Now, one thing we're going to have to figure out is, remember, we had three opinions in the Mishnah. We had the Tanakama saying only the Korban Pesach. We had Rabbi Huda saying the Korban Pesach and the Korban Tomid. And then we had Reb Shimon distinguishing between on Erev Pesach after Chatzos versus during the rest of Pesach, where on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, he's only chayev for Korban Pesach, and only if the Korban Pesach was shechted validly, so not if it was a shechita sheiner uya. And on the other hand, during the rest of Pesach, he says any Korban that's brought, which ends up being kosher, he's also chayev for. So we're going to have to figure out, when we say in the Braisa over here, Omru Loi, the Chachamim said to him, that who are these Chachamim? Are they the Tanakama of our Mishnah, which would be the Mayor of Pashtus, or is it Reb Shimon? So continues the Braisa. Emasai, Bizman Shiesh La Sheikhet Ola Zodik Ola Echab Ibn Nechavura. When does this apply? Only if the one who shechts, or the one who sprinkles the blood, or the one who, or any member of the group that's registered for this Korban Pesach, if they have Chametz, then that triggers the Chiyuv of Lo Sishchat Al Chametz. But as we said yesterday, if there's somebody at the other end of the world who has chametz, then we're not concerned about him, because even though it says lo sishchat al chametz, and that implies any chametz, but because, as we said before, because the pasuk continues lo yolin, you shouldn't leave over any of the meat of the Korban Pesach or any of the fat of the Korban Pesach. So only those who are involved in eating the meat or burning the fat are the ones who are chayev, not somebody who's not even registered for this Korban Pesach. And the Braisa continues, ve'echad ha-shoichet, ve'echad ha-zorek, ve'echad ha-moylik, ve'echad ha-mazechayev, whether both the person who shechts the Korban Pesach and the one who sprinkles the blood and somebody who does malika. So now we have the first contradiction because the previous Braisa said that malika is not a problem, but here we're saying that malika is a problem. Ve'echad ha-mazeh, or whether he squeezes out the blood of the bird Korban on the Mizbeach. Chayev, then he's chayev. Now that's the problem. First of all, the problem is with the first braisa that we said he's potter if he does malika and has chametz in his possession, and now we're saying he's chayev. Second of all, obviously the korban pesach is not a bird, so we're saying that he's chayev for other korbanos as well. But this very braisa itself began by saying that omruloi. We said the chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda that we're only talking about the korban pesach. So how all of a sudden are we saying that it would apply to malika or squeezing of the blood of a chatas ha'oif, which is obviously not a Korban Pesach. So after we quote the whole Braisa, then we're going to figure this out. Aval ha-koymitza sa-mincha, but if a Kohen does kmitza of a Korban Mincha on Erev Pesach afternoon, and he has chometz in his possession, eino over b'loisa said, then he's not over on a loisa said, because at least melika, you could say, is somewhat similar to shchita. But kmitza is obviously not at all similar to shchita. So therefore, there's no reason to include it under lois sishchata chometz. And the braisa finishes off. And the kohen who's burning the fat of the emurim, I've always been translating emurim as fat. Really, it's more general than that, as we're going to see soon. For example, the emurim include the kidneys, which are not fat. So whatever, the emurim are the parts that have to be burnt on the mizbeach. So somebody who burns those parts on the mizbeach and he has chometz in his possession, whether we're talking about the korban pesach or whether we're talking about any other korbanos, eino over b'loisese, and then he's not over on the sloisese.
So now, where does the word emurim come from?
Where does the word emurim come from? So one explanation is it comes from the word omar, that these are the parts that Hashem said should be burnt on the mizbeach. Another explanation is it comes from the word mar, where in Aramaic, the word mar means master. We often use it as a title of honor for Amiroyim. So it means like these are the masters, these are the really important parts of the korban, the ones that are burnt on the mizbeach. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Kasha Malika Malika Kasha Akhtara Akhtara. So now we have a contradiction. Bepashtus, we would start by assuming that both Braises are talking about at the same time on Erev Pesach afternoon, and the first Braise is saying that he's not over if he does Malika. The second one says he is. And we're talking about, obviously, again, Malika is not a Korban Pesach. And so two things. Number one, that we're considering Malika the equivalent of Shchita. And number two, that we're saying, therefore, that this din of lo sishchat al-chometz applies to other korbanos, not just the korban pesach, because obviously a korban pesach can't be a bird, and kasha haktara haktara. And you have a contradiction about the question, what about if he's burning the emurim, where the first braisa says the one who's burning the emurim is over, and that's, we brought that as a proof to the papa, and the second braisa is saying that he's not. So how do you reconcile that? So the Gemara says, "V'litai meich, according to your own svara that you're asking the question. Never mind the two braises. If you're assuming that both braises are talking on erev Pesach, then tikshiloch hi gufa. Then you have a contradiction within the second braise itself. Dikatoni lo amru elav Pesach bilvad. First we say the Chachamim answer to Rabbi Yehuda that." That this concept of Lashishchat al-chometz applies only to the Korban Pesach, not to other korbanos, not like he says that it applies to the Talmud as well. And then it's mentioning bird korbanos, which again, a bird korbanos is a bird korban, a chatas ha'oif, is not a Korban Pesach. So within that braisa itself, you see a contradiction that you have to reconcile. Ella, no. So rather the answer is like this. Hava Harab Shimon. We can say like this. Both braises are according to Rab Shimon. Now again, Rab Shimon in our Mishnah had said that on Erev Pesach itself, only the Korban Pesach is the person chayev for doing the shchita or the zrika of while he has chametz in his possession, not other korbanos. On the other hand, he said during Pesach, any korban, so on Erev Pesach, he patterned for the Pesach itself when it's shaloi l'shmoi because it's posel. So he says only if it became a kosher korban and a Pesach that's shechted on Erev Pesach, shaloi l'shmoi becomes posel, the Pesach and the chatas. During Pesach, on the other hand, he said that any other korbanos that are shechted, that are kosher, he's also going to be chayev for. So once we understand that both braises are according to Reb Shimon, so now malika, malika loikasha. So now there's no contradiction between the two statements about malika, because kan ba'ba also kan b'chulei shomoyed. One's talking about on the 14th of Nisan, the other is talking about during chol hamoed. So on the 14th of Nisan, that would be the first braisa. So there, which the first braisa actually, the first braisa specified actually, Rashi says, because the first braisa had said, "Ashoichet es haPesach al haChometz over b'loy seseh." That we're talking where he's shechting the Korban Pesach, meaning, in other words, on Erev Pesach. So therefore, when it mentions that he's potter from Malika, means not only Malika, means shechita of a regular Korban as well. So let's say, for example, we had our same Mechusa Kapara. Let's say he's a rich Metzora, or she's a rich Yeledis, and their Chatas is an animal. So therefore, you don't do Malika, you do actual shechita, but it's not the Korban Pesach. So Reb Shimon would still say that your potter. So the fact is, Rashi says, we mention a bird only because, practically speaking, what usually gets left for after the Tamid, we said before, most Korbanos are supposed to be brought before the Korban Tamid. Usually what would be left after the Korban Tamid would only be a bird. So that Braisa is talking about on the 14th. Therefore, he's pattering for Malika because he patters for any Korban other than the Korban Pesach. Kan b'chulei shomoyed, whereas the second Braisa is talking about on chol hamoed. So therefore, Reb Shimon wants you to know, when I'm telling you in the Mishnah that that a person is chayev for shechting a korban during Pesach while he has chometz in his possession, that means not only shechita but also malika. So that's how we reconcile the two statements about malika. V'aydi v'aydi Reb Shimon, and therefore both braises are according to Reb Shimon. Haktora a haktori nami lekasha. As far as the difference between the two braises, as far as burning the emurim, where the first braise says that the one who's burning them is chayev if he has chometz, and the second one says not, that is also not a kasha, because that actually tanoi. That, as a matter of fact, is a machloikas tanoim within what Reb Shimon holds. And the machloikas would be de ikka de makish haktora l'shchita. Now we said yesterday, where bechlal do we see that the one who's burning the emurim should be chayev? We said because we make a hekish in the pasuk, since it says loy sishchat al chometz dam zivchi, don't shecht the korban pesach with chometz in your possession, and v'lo yolin, and there shouldn't be left over. You have actually two different psukim. One of them says v'lo yolin chelev chagi ad boiker, the fat of my korban, meaning the korban pesach, shouldn't be left over till the morning. The other one says lo yolin la boiker zevach chag haposach, that the korban pesach itself shouldn't be left over till the morning. In any case, the point is you have a hekish between. We said you have a hekish, therefore, between the shchita and halona and leaving it overnight. So we said those who are. So we said the same way as the issur applies, the same way as the lav applies to the one who's shochet, the same way it applies to the one who burns the emurim, because they are also halona is relevant. So within that you have a machloikas. The ikka the makish haktar l'shchita. One tana holds that we do make that hekish. And therefore, it applies not only to the shchita, and it applies to the shchita. It applies to the zrika as well, because the pasuk says dam zivchi, the blood of my korban. But and it also applies to the emurim because of lo yolin. Umar lesle v'ika mandaloi makish. On the other hand, you have another tana who holds that you don't make that hekish. He says that no, only shchita and zrika, but not haktara. Now, Tosfos says, actually, he will agree that the hekesh applies to say that we asked before that why don't we say that it applies if anybody has chometz? And the answer is because then we brought in this hekesh. So fine, this Manda Omer will agree that we use the hekesh for that purpose, and we say that that only those who are involved with the korban, only those who are involved in not leaving any of it over, those are the ones who are going to be chayev. So therefore, not somebody b'sofa olam who's not involved with this korban pesach at all. But he says you're not going to make the hekish. You're not going to extend it to the point of saying that the one who's maktu, the emurim, is also going to be chayev.
It's interesting. The Gemara style usually is it'll ask on Tanakama and then it'll ask on the other person, the Mishnah. Right. Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, how it's a steer between one place and another place, and how each one answers it. So we answer now according to Rabbi Shimon, but we don't ask according to Rabbi Meir.
Because we don't need, we said before, the mayor said, we said before, the mayor holds that it applies only to the Korban Pesach, because it says, because the Pasuk is talking about the Korban Pesach. We, on the contrary, we have to understand Reb Shimon's opinion. We're going to have to understand, the next piece, soon, we're going to ask, where does Reb Yehuda get that this din should apply to the Tamid, and where does Reb Shimon get that it should apply to other Korbanos during Pesach? They're the ones who we need to explain. Reb Shimon, Reb Meir's opinion that it applies only to the Korban Pesach is very straightforward. We don't need to ask how he's going to understand the psukim.
Okay, so that's really so straight. Okay.
Yeah, what we do need to understand is we had two brises, which again, we thought that both brises are talking on the 14th of Nisan, and now we're answering that no, as far as the Malika, one of them is talking on Erev Pesach and the other one's talking during Pesach, and they both go according to Reb Shimon. There is a machloikus within Reb Shimon's opinion whether this din of Lo Sishchat HaChametz also applies to those who are burning the Emurim or not.
Okay. And if that's the case also, then I guess Gemara will speak about how they learn out from the Pesukim. How is one speaking about Erev Pesach, one speaking about during Pesach?
So that's what we're going to talk about later on. That's what we're going to talk about in a minute, yeah. So first, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afa Tamid B'chola. Rabbi Yehuda had said that also the Korban Tamid, a person is chayev for shechting it when he has chametz in his possession. So my time is Rabbi Yehuda. So why does Rabbi Yehuda say that? He says, because Amalach Zivchi. Because if you look at the pasuk, the expression is "Lois sishchat al chametz dam zivchi." Don't shecht with chametz in your possession the blood of my korban. So what does that mean? Zevach hamiyuchad li. That means the korban that is uniquely mine. Umayni hu tamid. Namely, that would be the korban tamid. The korban tamid is actually the only one which the Torah calls the. We say it in morning davening as korban ni lachmi leishai, etc. So Hashem calls it, like, so to speak, my personal korban more so than any other korban. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing. Dam zivchi means the korban that's uniquely mine, namely the korban tamid. Okay, well, obviously, the mayor disagrees and says that nevertheless, Zivchi still means the Korban Pesach.
What's about the Tam Shabbat Abayim?
That's what we're talking to Tam Shabbat. Obviously, the Korban Tamid Shal Shachar, you're still allowed to have chametz in your possession when it's brought. So even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that's not called Zivchi for this purpose.
No, the Lashon Hash, Kabban Ni Lachmi, all that is only referring to
Rabbi Abayim. It's talking about both Tamidim. But practically speaking, you can't say that it applies to the Tamid Shal Shachar. Otherwise, you'd have to say that throughout the year, if you have chametz in your possession, you can't shech the Tamid Shal Shachar, and we don't find any such thing. The fact is, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that the context we are talking about over here is the Korban Pesach. He just says, since it says Zivchi, then it means also my unique Korban, which is brought at the same time, right before the Korban Pesach, namely the Tamid Shabbat HaBayim. Okay. Then we said, Reb Shimon Omer Pesach Ba'aba Asuchula, that Reb Shimon had drawn a distinction like this. On Erev Pesach itself, a person is chayev only for the Korban Pesach, and only if that Korban was kosher, not if the Shechita was posel, because, for example, he shechted at Shaloi Lishmoi, because, as we said in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon always holds that Shechita Shein Ru'uya is not considered a Shechita, and in this case, it would be Shechita Shein Ru'uya, because it doesn't, it's not a kosher shechita because the korban itself is posel. On the other hand, he said during Pesach itself, any korban that a person shechts, or as we said before, not only shechita but also malika, if the korban ends up being kosher, whether it was lishmoy or shaloi lishmoy, because even if it's shaloi lishmoy, it still is a kosher korban. It just doesn't count for the owner's chayva. Then he'd be chayiv if he has chametz in his possession, with the exception of the chatas, because chatas shaloi lishmoy is posel. So my time of the Reb Shimon. So why does Reb Shimon say that? So he says like this: "Tichtiv zivchi zivchi trei zimri." This word zivchi, which Reb Yehuda just focused on and said we learn from that the Korban Tamid, Reb Shimon says actually you have that twice because it repeats this half of the pasuk. Well, one pasuk says what's slightly different. One pasuk says lois sizbach al chametz dam zivchi. The other one says lois sishchat al chametz dam zivchi. Whatever zavach and shachat are two synonyms, but in both cases it says zivchi. So it says twice. Therefore, Reb Shimon is going to use a method of drasha that the Gemara uses in a few places called gurin umaisifin vedoshin. We take a letter away from one word. We add it to a different word, and then we douse in the result. So koribe zevach zvochai. What happens is if we take the two words zivchi, we take a yud from one of them and attach it to the other one, then the one without the yud is left as zevach, meaning a korban, and the other one becomes zvochai in the plural, my korban nois. So Reb Shimon says, "L'may hilchsa pagini rachmana mehadodi." So why would the Torah separate them? Why doesn't it just say "zvochai" in one pasuk? instead of having to do this Gerdon and Masifin Radoshin. So he says, L'meimar, it comes to teach us like this. Bisman de'ika zevach, at the time when there is a Korban Pesach to be brought, namely the afternoon of Erev Pesach, loy mechayev azvochai, during that time, only the zevach is the person chayev for, not zvochai, not for other korbanos. So therefore, again, as he said in the Mishnah, if he shechts any other korban during that time with chametz in his possession, then he's going to be potter. Bisman de leka zevach, on the other hand, when there's no zevach, when there's no Korban Pesach, namely any time other than Erev Pesach afternoon, mechayev azvachai, then he's going to be chayev if he has chometz when he shechts any other zvachim. Now again, obviously Reb Shimon is not going to apply that during the year. He's only going to apply that during the time when we know from elsewhere in the Torah that you're not allowed to have chometz in your possession, namely the rest of Pesach. So that's where he gets from. Now again, obviously Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda don't have to agree with that. They don't have to agree that Gerdon and Masifin Vedoshin, at least in this case, is a valid method of Derasha. So therefore, they're going to disagree. We said in the Mishnah, in Reb Shimon's opinion, Uva Moyed L'Shmoy Pater V'chola, we said that during Chol HaMoed itself, if a person shechts the Korban Pesach L'Shmoy, then he'll be Pater, because at that point it can't be a Korban Pesach anymore, it becomes a Korban Shlomim, and there's no problem. If he shechts it l'shmoy, then it's not a valid Korban Pesach, then it's posel, because it's after Erev Pesach, it's not the time to bring a Korban Pesach anymore. Therefore, it's not a valid shchita, it becomes a posel a Korban, and again, Reb Shimon holds shchita shein ru'uya is not a valid shchita. So therefore, he's potter. If he shechted it, shaloi l'shmoi, continues the Mishnah, then he would be chayev, because shaloi l'shmoi, a Pesach that's shechted, shaloi l'shmoi, at that time, is going to become a shlomim. So the Gemara says, taima de shaloi l'shmoi. So why is he potter? Only because he specified shaloi l'shmoi. Hostoma potter, implying that if he shechted it stam, without specifying one way or the other, then he would be potter, because apparently the Mishnah is saying only if he said shaloi l'shmoi. Only if he said l'shmoy is he chayev. If he said shaloi l'shmoy, then he's chayev, because now he's turned it from a Pesach into a shlomim, and according to Reb Shimon, shlomim is in the category of zvachai, which he just said the person is chayev for, therefore he's chayev. But in other words, the implication is, if he shechted it explicitly having in mind that it's a Pesach, then he'd be potter, like Reb Shimon says, because then it's not a Pesach, it's a posel a korban, but also if it was stoma, also if he didn't say one way or the other. So the question is, am I? Now, why should he be potter in that case? Pesach b'shavi ma'isa shana shlomim habi. Doesn't a Pesach out in the time when it can't be brought as a Korban Pesach, doesn't it automatically become a shlomim? So therefore, he shouldn't even need to say, I am removing this from being a Pesach and making it into something else. Just the fact that he shechts it stam at that time should automatically turn it into a shlomim. And according to Reb Shimon's rule, he should be chayev. So does that mean Shamat Mina Pesach B'Shavi Ma'aseshana Bo Yakira? Does that mean that we can learn from that that even during the rest of the year, in order to turn the Korban Pesach into a different Korban, you need Akira? You need to actually say that I'm transforming this into a different Korban. Now, we talked about the other day that Tosfos had mentioned, before Pesach, there's no question you need to do that, because if you have an animal before Pesach that was designated as a potential Korban Pesach, and you now want to turn it into a different Korban, of course you have to do something or say something to show that you're doing that, because otherwise we would assume that you mean for it to be a Korban Pesach, and you're just shechting it early. But after Erev Pesach is over, on the face of it, this animal is not going to be kosher for a Korban Pesach in the future, because by the time next Pesach rolls around, the animal is going to be over a year old, and it's anyway possible for a Pesach. So why should it need Akira? Does our Mishnah show that it should, that even then we would say that if you shecht it stam, then the default assumption is it remains a Korban Pesach, and only if you said, so only if you said I'm shechting it l'shem shlomim, does it become a shlomim? That's how Rashi learns the question. Tosfos actually has a different girsa and doesn't like Rashi's explanation. And then they say the question is from the part where it said l'shmoy, where if he shechts it l'shmoy, then he's potter because it's a posel of Pesach. So the question is why, if he's shechting it l'shmoy, then isn't he shechting a shlomim l'shem Pesach? He's shechting an animal that should be a shlomim, but he's having in mind that it's the Korban Pesach, and according to We learned a couple of Mishnayos ago that Rabbi Yeshua would say that if a person shechts a different korban, having in mind that it's the korban Pesach, then it's still valid, because Rabbi Yeshua had said only the korban Pesach if he shechts shaloi l'shmo is possible, but a different korban that he shechts having in mind that it's a korban Pesach would be kosher. It just wouldn't count for his choiv of if he has to bring a shlomim, then he's not yotze with that. So now the question would be, so now this animal on the face of it is not going to be a Pesach. Automatically, it becomes a Shlomim on the face of it. So he's shechting a Shlomim L'Shem Pesach, and that shouldn't be possible. And yet the Mishnah is implying that it is possible. So wouldn't that show that even in that case, you need Akira, you need to actually say this is a Shlomim in order for it to not be a Pesach? So the answer is Amar Abchir Bagamda Nizruka Mepi Chavura. The following answer was said unanimously by the Chavura, by the group of Chachamim in the Beis Medrash. For Amru, so they said the case is Kagon Shoyu Bailam Tmei Mes V'Nitchin LePesach Sheni. The case is where the owner of this korban was Tmei Mes come Erev Pesach, and therefore he's being pushed off to Pesach Sheni. Destomei L'Shom Pesach Koi. So now, between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni is the equivalent of before Pesach Rishon for everybody else, meaning this animal is still assumed to be that it's going to be for a Korban Pesach because this guy is going to have to bring Pesach Sheni. Therefore, now if he goes and shechts it, now during Pesach, then there has to be Akira to demonstrate that he's actually taking it away from being a Pesach and turning it into a Shlomim. Otherwise, we would assume that he still means for it to be a Pesach and he's just shechting it early and it becomes a posel a Pesach. But if he hadn't been Tomei Mes on Erev Pesach, and therefore he had brought a Korban Pesach, then yes, we automatically, this animal maybe would become a Shlomim without requiring Akira, because now he doesn't need a Korban Pesach to be Yotze anymore. Mishnah says, so now we're going to get to the actual procedure. Till now, we've been talking about the dinim of what's involved in shechting the Korban Pesach, and we had the first Mishnah of our Perek told us the time when the Korban Pesach is shechted. Then we went through various dinim about the kavonis and then statements that a person has or doesn't have in mind while he's shechting it. Now we're getting to the actual procedure of bringing the Korban Pesach. So the Mishnah says, HaPesach nishchat b'sholosh kitris. The Korban Pesach is supposed to be shechted with three groups. Meaning, in other words, it actually says, even if you have very few people who are coming to shecht the Korban, nevertheless, there's a mitzvah for them to divide into three groups. Because the Pasuk says, last week's parasha, the whole congregation of the Eda of the people, of the Jewish people, should shecht it. So we learn each of these phrases, kohol, the Eda of Yisrael, each of those expressions, kohol means 10, Eda means 10, Yisrael means 10, and therefore it means three, not 10, we're going to talk in the Gemara about 10. It means that you have three different groups, a group called kohol, a group called Eda, and a group called Yisrael. The Medrash actually mentions that by the first Pesach that they shechted in Mitzrayim, Moshe and Aaron announced, and a ness happened, and their voice traveled throughout the whole Egypt. The people living from this place to this place are all group number one. From this place to this place is group number two. From this place to this place is group number three. So even though each of them is shechting it in their houses, nevertheless, they were divided into three groups like that. So La'asid Lave, when they shecht the Korban Pesach in the Mishkan and later on in the Beis Mikdash, then they also had to have three groups. By the way, though, the Rambam does write, b'dievet, if they didn't do that, then the korban is still kosher, because with kodshim, you have a rule called shana olav akosav la'akiv, only if the pasuk repeats a din, only then is it essential, and without it, the korban is possible. Here, the pasuk doesn't repeat it, so therefore, it's a lachatchiladika thing, but it's not, but b'dievet, if they didn't, then it's still kosher. So continues the Mishnah, Nichnas Akatarishoina. So the first group would come into the Azara, Nismala Hazara, and once the Azara was full, Nalu Dalsas Hazara, they would close or lock the doors of the Azara. We'll see on Amud Beis who locked it. Toku Vehiri over Toku, at that point they would blow a Tkia through a Tkia. Now, in general, they would blow shofar when korbanos are being brought. For example, when the Talmud is being brought, so over here also in connection with the Korban Pesach, there have to be tekiyas. So they would blow nine tekiyas. We'll talk about in a little bit where these tekiyas are distributed. Altogether, the Mishnah in Sukkah tells us, or actually the Gemara in Sukkah tells us, that altogether on Erev Pesach, they would blow 27 shofar sounds. Okay, Mishnah continues. Kohenim onim shuris. The Kohenim would stand in rows from the area where the shchita is done until the Mizbeach. Now the Korban Pesach, being Kodshim Kalim, can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. Practically speaking, most of the shechita would be done as much as possible on the north side, because that's where you have the rings to hold them, and that's where you have the Beis Hamit B'chaim to skin them, etc. But it could be shechted anywhere in the Azara. So the Kohenim are standing in rows, reaching from there until the Mizbeach. With the idea being, in other words, because there were a lot of people over there and there were a lot of korbanos, so you couldn't have, there wasn't enough time for each kohen, not like this, you have to have, the blood of each korban has to be poured on the mizbeach. You didn't have enough time for each kohen to go collect the blood in the mizrach and then walk it over there and put it. So therefore, they would pass it from one kohen to the next, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So they're standing in rows. Of Yideim Bazichei Kesef or Bazichei Zahav. They had in their hands spoons or bowls of gold and ones of silver. Shura Shekola Kesef. A row that was all silver would be all silver. In other words, there would be some rows where they're holding all, where all the Kohenim are holding silver bowls. The Shura Shekola Zahav. A different row would be all gold bowls. Loi Hayom Me'uravin. They wouldn't mix them up. They didn't have any rows that were some gold, some silver. These bowls that they had to collect the blood of the korban did not have flat bottoms. Rashi says they had pointy bottoms. The Meiri said they had rounded bottoms. Whatever the case, because they might put them down and then the blood would congeal. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, in this particular case with the korban Pesach, you have so many korbanos being shechted one after the other that a kohen might put down the bowl for a minute in order to deal with something else, in order to deal with a different korban's blood or whatever. Meanwhile, it gets left on the floor over there. It winds up getting congealed. And now, once the blood is congealed, you can't sprinkle on the mizbeach. And then you have a posel of korban pesach someplace over there. So therefore, to begin with, they made the bazichin without flat bottoms, so they can't put them down, and that way the blood won't congeal. That way, there's no possibility of them putting them down, and therefore it'll get right to the mizbeach and get poured like it's supposed to. There is, by the way, there's an interesting sefer called Shevet Yehuda. The author of it was one of the Jews who was expelled from Spain and later on from Portugal. He wound up in Turkey. He wrote a sefer. He lists over there dozens of times in Jewish history when there were anti-Semitic persecutions against Jews. Besides the expulsion from Spain, there were many more. There were many more before that. Actually, in the sefer, he has some discussions over there discussing why is it that the Jewish people have to go through so much in history. Anyway, in the course of it, towards the end of it, he brings a report by a Roman consul who visited Yerushalayim and asked a lot about what's going on in the Beis Mikdash. So obviously, being a goy, he couldn't actually come in, but he was able to watch from far and he was able to get a report from other people of what was done. So he describes, I mean, whether this report is authentic is another question, I have no idea. But anyway, he describes a lot of the details very similar to what we have in the Mishnah and in the Gemara over here. He mentions that we're going to say in the Gemara that they're passing the bowls back and forth. He says it looked like arrows flying back and forth. They're passing them so quickly. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Shachat Yisrael, the Kibbol HaKoyin. So Yisrael would shech the korban. A kohen would do the kabbalah sadam. We're going to ask in the Gemara, what do you mean? Does it have to be a Yisrael that shecht? Not necessarily. So we'll see that in the Gemara. Noisne l'chaveira. Then the kohen hands the bowl to the next kohen next to him. V'chaveira l'chaveira. And that, but he hands it to the next one. Or makabal samolay or machzer sereikon. Each time the kohen first receives the full bowl from the kohen next to him, and then he passes back the empty one that had been, where the blood had been poured out on the mizbeach. So they're going back and forth. And like I said, this report from this woman describes that they were doing it so fast that it looked like arrows. the Gemara is going to explain, by the way, that every phrase in the Mishnah over here in this description is actually teaching us halacha. It's not just giving us a nice description that we should be able to relive what it was like to bring the Korban Pesach. We're actually learning dinim from each of these phrases. So we'll see in the Gemara. Next, koyen akorav etz al mizbeach, the koyen in each row who was closest to the mizbeach, zorka zrika achas keneged ha'yisoid, he would splash the blood with one splash above the yisoid. Now, in Masechet Zvachim, the Gemara tells us that the mizbeach had a yisoid only around two full sides. The yisoid went along the whole west side of the mizbeach and the whole north side. It stuck out a little bit on the east side and on the south side. The rule was that the Korban Pesach, the blood of it is dashed, is thrown against the side of the mizbeach. Actually, we're going to discuss in the Gemara whether it's shvicha or zrika, but anyway, that's another question. But anyway, it had to be above the yisoid, so it had to be. They had to do it above on some side, on some part of the wall of the mizbeach above the yisod. So one of those two sides. The point is, Rashi says they're dashing it from the bowl itself. The kohen is not putting in his finger and applying it to the mizbeach. That you only do by chatos. Most other korbanos, including the korban pesach, you take the bowl itself and you dash the blood for out of the bowl against the wall of the mizbeach. Okay. And then again, once he does that, then he passes it back to the next kohen, and they're going back and forth until it gets back to the end of the line where the next shritah is going to take place, and then they use the same bowl over and over again. Fine. Eventually, yotza kat rishona v'nichnas kat shniya, the first group eventually finishes, and then they leave. The second group comes in. The second group goes out, the third one comes in, and it's the same procedure. The same procedure is done for each of the groups. Now, while they're shechting the Korban Pesach, koru es ahalo, they would say halo. Now, who's the they? Rashi expresses over here, akol kites koi, it refers to all the groups. And you have some mafoshim explain that what Rashi means by that is he means the groups themselves, the Yisraelim themselves, who are shecht in the Korban Pesach, they would sing Hallel. On the other hand, Tosfos says over here, it means the Levim would say Hallel. And in fact, there's other places where Rashi himself explains explicitly the same way. The Rambam also writes that way. So there's an explanation from the Brisker Rav, from Revelville Brisker, that says that actually both of them would. The Yisraelim would be shecht, would be saying Hallel as an because they're shechting their Korban Pesach. It's in connection with the mitzvah of Pesach, and the Levim would be saying it because you have to say Shira when a Korban is brought. On the other hand, the Rebbe has a letter about this. So in the Rebbe's notes in the Haggadah on the Seder Korban Pesach, when we say over there on Erev Pesach, Koru Asahalo, the Rebbe adds that it means Levim. So then Reb Shlomo Yosef Zevin wrote to the Rebbe, what do you mean necessarily Levim? Don't we see here from Rashi that it might have been that it might have been the Yisraelim? And the Rebbe answers that no, Rashi is not explicitly saying it's the Yisraelim. Maybe what Rashi means when he mentions Kol Kittis is just to inform us that the same thing was done while all three groups were bringing it. You shouldn't think that maybe only when we say Koru Asahalo, maybe it only refers to the first group, or maybe it only refers to the third group. It means while each group is doing it, they're saying Hallel, but not that the Yisraelim would be saying it, only the Levim would be saying it. So we could understand that Rebbe says, anyway, listen, since you have, the Rambam clearly says that, and he paskens the halacha. So therefore, so we don't have to, you're saying maybe Rashi is saying that it means the Yisraelim, but Rashi himself, but even if we said that's what Rashi means, then Rashi, after all, is not coming to paskin halacha. So in terms of the halacha, when we're actually saying it in the Seder Korban Pesach, then we can assume it means just the Levim. By the way, Tosfos mentions over here that usually you say Shira only when the wine of a Korban is being poured. Here there's no wine involved. So, Tosfos says that over here, what it is that when a korban is being brought, then you only say shira when the wine is being brought. Here, what they would do is they would shecht it. They would say it during the shchita itself, before the hakrava. The Rambam phrases it a little differently. Since there's no wine in this case, then they do it during the shchita. Okay. Anyway, so they would say hallel. Im gamru shonu, if they finished the whole hallel and everybody in that group was not yet finished with the Korban Pesach, Shonu, then they would repeat the Hallel, the Im Shonu Shilshu, and if they said it a second time over, then they'd say it a third time. Afal Pishale Shilshu Mi Mayhem. Now, even though, in fact, they never actually said it three times, Rashi says it means they never finished Rashi in Sukkah, where it also discusses this, says that it means they never finished the third time. They might start the third time, but they never finished it. Tosfos over there discusses now in connection with, I said before, that the Mishnah, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us that they blew 27 tekiyas during the Hallels. So Rashi understands it like this. Each time before they began Hallel, they would blow nine shofar sounds. So therefore you have nine for the first one, nine for the second one, and nine for the third one. So that's 27. On the other hand, Tosfos says over there, no, since it means that they didn't necessarily even start Hallel the third time. So Tosfos explains what it means is they would blow nine shofar sounds before the first section of Hallel, before Halleluka, Hallelu Avdi Hashem, another nine before the second section of Ahavdi, and a third one before the third section, Hodu Lashem Kitov. So therefore, it comes out there's a minimum of 27. According to Tosfos, doesn't mean that necessarily there's only 27. There could be more if they had to repeat Hallel, but at the very least, the minimum number of blasts that they would do is 27. Okay. Anyway, so Afal Pishale Shilshu Miyameihem. So it never happened that they did it a third time. According to Rashi, that they finished a third time. According to Tosfos, that they even started a third time within each group. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mimeim Shokat Shlishis, Lo Higiu Le'ahavti Ki Yishma Hashem. In all the years when they had the third group, they never even reached the first time in Hallel until Ahavti Ki Yishma Hashem, Mepnesha Amamu Otim, because there were very few people in the third group, because most people are Zrizim, and they would come in the first and the second group. So therefore, they never even reached Ahavti. The Gemara is going to call it, the Gemara that we'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, calls them Katatzlonin, the lazy group, because like they're lazy and they show up at the end, and there's a vote from the Kotzker. That's why they never reached Ahavti in their Hallel while they're Shechting the Korban Pesach, because if they loved Hashem, if they actually loved Hashem, then they wouldn't be lazy, and they would come earlier in time to bring the Korban Pesach. Okay. Continues the Mishnah, K'maaseo b'chayo kach maaseo b'shabbos, the same way as it was done on weekdays, so it was done on Shabbos. Exactly the same procedure of bringing the Korban Pesach. Ela shakoinim medichim es ha'azara shaloi b'tzoin chachamim. A difference is that the Kohenim would wash the floor of the Azara afterwards, and if it was Shabbos, then they were doing that not with the consent of the Chachamim, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow. So how they did it, Rashi explains. We say it every year in the Seder Korban Pesach. They would stop up the outflow of the, there was a water channel running through the Azara called the Amma. They would stop up the outflow of it. Then the water overflows the floor. And then they would open it up and all the water would drain out. So on Shabbos, when they were doing that, was Shaloi B'Tzon Chachamim, was not with the consent of the Chachamim, as we'll learn in the Gemara, why not? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kois Hayim Malam Midamat Harovis. Rabbi Yehuda says one thing they would do at the end before they washed the floor, they would take a cup full of blood from all the mixed blood that was on the floor, because inevitably you had some blood spilled on the floor. Zoku Zrika Achas Agabe Mizbeach, and they would throw that one throw against the Mizbeach. In other words, with the idea being, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, in case some person's Korban Pesach, in case the blood spilled and never made it to the Mizbeach, this way you could be machshir that Korban. The Chachamim didn't agree with him for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara.
Okay, we learned this. We learned this earlier about if it hits the floor, if it's not good, if it is good, if it's mixed up. We learned this.
We're going to talk about in the Gemara why it is that Rabbi Yehuda says that it's fine, and why it is that the Chachamim say it's not fine. Yeah, we learned about it in Zvachim last time around. So yeah, so that's probably where you remember it from. And by the way, that Tzlach points out an interesting thing. First, the Mishnah had said it's the same on weekdays and on Shabbos, and then we're first mentioning Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about the blood. So he says, because Rabbi Yehuda would say, given the whole thing is only because of Suffolk, and after all, the only reason we can sprinkle the blood of a korban on Shabbos is only because the actual korban itself is Doicha Shabbos, but not just a Suffolk like this. So he learns that Rabbi Yehuda would say, there is another difference between weekdays and Shabbos. On Shabbos, they would not do this, because it might be that they're not doing it. It might be that they're not a reason to do it. It might be that there was no korban whose blood spilled, and therefore there's not a valid reason to do that on Shabbos, since normally it's an Isser D'Rabbanan. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Ketzad tolu mafshitin. How would they hang up the Korban Pesach and strip the skin off? They had to strip the skin off, first of all, in order to cut it open and get the emurim out. And later on, of course, they're going to have to roast it. So how did they do that? There were iron hooks attached to the walls and to the pillars. They had the pillars. They're called nanosin, short pillars with wooden blocks on top of them in the area of the Beis HaMitbachayim, and they had hooks attached to them. And then there were also hooks attached to the walls around. So they would hang the korban on that. They'd make a hole in one of the back legs of the korban and hang it from that, and then strip off the skin. If a person doesn't have room, there's no hooks left for him to hang up his korban and strip off the skin. Then maklis dakim b'chalokim hayusham. Then instead, they had over there thin, smooth sticks. So you'd take a stick, you'd put one end on your shoulder, the other end on the shoulder of the person next to you, and then you'd hang the Korban Pesach from that and skin it. Rabbi Yezer says, not necessarily always, if the 14th of Nisan comes out on Shabbos, and then you're not, so Rashi says you're not able to be misakin the sticks, which sounds like it means you're not allowed to peel them, although Achronim asks, what do you mean? You're not allowed to peel them. They could have been peeled before Shabbos. It means, in other words, more that they couldn't carry them, because we learned in Masechta Shabbos that there was a period when the dinim of mukta were much stricter than they are now. And during that time, one of the rules was that these sticks were considered mukta. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, at that point, you couldn't use them on Shabbos. So if Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, then you couldn't use them, because at that time, the gzera of mukta included such sticks. Therefore, maniach yodei kesef chaveri. Therefore, instead of the sticks, one person would put his right hand on the other person's left shoulder, the yad chaveri al ksefer, and then the other person would put his left arm on your right shoulder, v'toilo mafshit, and then you hang the korban pesach from your arms, and then you have this way: you have your left hand is holding up the pesach, and your right hand is available to pull off the skin. Okay. Either way, at one way or another, you got the korban pesach skinned. Next, kroy, you rip open, you cut open the Korban Pesach, v'hoitzias emurav, you take out the emurim, nosne, the various fats, as well as the kidneys and a couple of other things, nosne b'mogis, you put them all into a bowl, v'hiktiran agame mizbeach, and he offered them on the mizbeach. The Gemara is going to ask later on, a couple of things seem to be wrong with this lashon. First of all, you don't offer them in the bowl, and second of all, who's being makter them, the same people who skin them? Obviously not, because the people who skin the korban are the owners of the korban, who are not necessarily kohenim. Burning the emurim on the mizbeach can only be done by kohenim. So we'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara will correct the lashon a little bit. Finally, yotze katerish. So now, what happens? Continuing on the topic. So now, if Erev Pesach was on a weekday, then fine. When each group is finished, they go home. But when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, they can't carry their korbanos Pesach home. So therefore, So yotzakat rishona v'yoshvala b'harabayis. The first group would go out and sit in the harabayis. Shnia b'cheil. The second group would go and sit in the cheil, which is the area. The cheil is the area around the azara and the ezras noshim. You had a fenced in area over there. There was around it was the sodig, which was a wooden lattice work fence. In particular, goyim were not allowed to enter into that area. So it was an area where they could sit for the meanwhile with their Korban Pesach and wait until after Shabbos. Vashlishis bimkoima imedes. The third group would stay standing where they are in the Azara. Rabbi Akiva Eger points out a reason why it says standing is because you have a din, ein yeshiva ba'azara, elo malche beis David bilvad. Only kings from Malchus beis David are allowed to sit in the Azara. So this third group can't sit in the Azara. Therefore, they have to stay standing where they are until Shabbos is over. Although the Tesefta brings a possibility that maybe they could go into the Ezras Noshim. Chashecha, once it got dark, once Shabbos was over, Yotze v'tzolos pischei, and then they would go and roast their Korban Pesach, because as we've learned previously, the roasting of the Korban Pesach is not Doicha Shabbos. The shchita and the offering of the Korban Pesach is Doicha Shabbos, but the roasting has to be done after Shabbos, so therefore they'd wait till Shabbos was over, and then they'd go home and start that. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Eina Pesach Nishchat Ela B'Gimel Kitters Shol Shloshim Shloshim Bnei Adam. The three groups that we're talking about in the Mishnah each have to consist of 30 people. Each of them has to consist of 30 people. My timer, Kohol the Ada the Yisrael, because the pasuk mentions by each one. We said in the Mishnah three groups because it says Kohol Ada and Yisrael. Misap Galon Iba Vasachas Iba Zachazer. Now we have a suffix. What does it mean? Does it mean now each of those phrases also means 10 people? The word Ada means 10 people. We find in various places. That's why Vinikdashli Besoich well Adas Bnei Yisrael means 10 people. This is the Gemara learns by a chain of Gzeda Shavas that this is where we learn that you need 10 people for any davar shebekdusha. Therefore, the word kohol and Yisrael over here also means 10 each. So mesap galon. So we have a suffix, says Rabbi Yitzchok. Iba vasachas, iba zachazeh. Do we mean that you need to have all at once 30 people? Or does it mean that you need to have three groups, each one of 10 people? So because of that, so hilkach b'in and shlosh kittis shol shloshim shloshim bnei adam. So you need three groups of 30 each. De'ibav asachas ha'ika ve'ibav zachazeh ha'ika. So therefore, whether you need 30 people all at once, then you have that each time you have 30 people. And if you need three groups, each of at least 10 people, you also have that. And the Gemara continues, hilkach. So therefore, you actually don't need 90 people. B'chamshin nami sagya. It's enough if you have 50 people. And you work like this. The eilid tlosin. 30 people go in for the first group. V'avdi. And they shecht and offer their korban pesach. Eili asara v'nafki asara. Now, 10 more people go in and 10 of the first group go out. So you still have 30 over there. And those next 10 that came in, they were the second group and they do it. Meanwhile, you have 30 people over there because you have 20 people over there who already brought the Korban Pesach and are around. And Eili Asara V'Nafki Asara. Then the same thing. And the last 10 people come in and the 10 more go out. So again, you have 10 more bring the Korban Pesach. And meanwhile, you have 20 other people there. So at all times, you have 30 people. Rabbeinu Hananel has a different girsa of it, actually, that what you do is you bring 30 in at a time, 10 of them bring their Korban Pesach, 20 of them don't yet, those 10 leave, another 10 come in, and 10 people bring their Korban Pesach, and then they leave, and then the last comes in, and the third group, the 30 people who are there, all of them bring the Korban Pesach. The advantage of that is that at all times, the 30 who are there are actually still people who are chayev to bring a Korban Pesach. So that's how you do it. The Rambam writes then that if you have less than 50 people, then l'chatchila you shouldn't be bringing the Korban Pesach. But again, since b'di'evad the whole thing of Sholosh Kittos is not ma'akiv, then if they did bring the Korban Pesach, then they're yotze. The other day we talked about what Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, talks about the Korban Pesach being associated with Chochma and Bina. So he mentions this concept in connection with that also. Since Chochma is associated with the letter Yud, And the letter Yud itself has three letters, Yud, Vav, Dalet, and each of those spelled out has three letters. Yud is spelled Yud, Vav, Dalet, Vav is Vav, Aleph, Vav, etc. So therefore, that's where we get these three kittis, and that's where we get that each of them has to have 10, but we have a suffix, whether it means 10 in each group or 30 in one group, because how do you look at the milui of these oisius? And therefore, so now the association with Bina is there are Chamishim Share Bina, and therefore the Gemara is telling us that 50 is enough. We said in the Mishnah, Nichnas Akat Rishon V'chula. We said when the first group comes in, we said they locked the doors of the Azara. So who locked it? Itmar. Abaya Amen Nina Lutznan. Abaya says they were locked. In other words, a nest would happen, that the gates would automatically lock by themselves once enough people are in. Rava Amen Nolan Tznan. Rava says they, meaning the Koyanim or the Levim, whatever, would lock the gates. So the Gemara says, "My benayu." What's the actual underlying machlokas between them? The answer is, "Ik benayu la mismach anisa." The argument between them is, "Can we rely on a nes?" Abaya amar nina lutnan. Abaya says they were locked by themselves, meaning kama de ailu malu. However many are going to come in, will come in. V'samchinen anisa. We rely on a nes. First of all, it means that the nes will be that the Rashi explains. It means, in other words, the nes will be. We don't have to worry that what if everybody comes in and we don't have anybody left for the second or third groups. We don't have to worry about that. We can be soimach on the nes that the azara will lock at exactly the right time and still have enough people left for the two other groups. Rabbi Nachmanano says it means we rely on a nes that we're not going to have too many people in there and somebody is going to get trampled. Rava Amar, Noilin Tanan. Rava says no. It means the Kohanim or the Levim would lock the doors. Veloisam Chenan Anissa. So we can't rely on a Nes. They have to look at the crowd and evaluate when the right time is to close it. So the Gemara says Vahod Tanan. Now we have a Mishnah. We learned it in Brachas. Actually, it's a Mishnah in Adias. Now the context is over there. It talks about like this. Akavya ben Mahalalel, the famous one from the third Perek of Pirkei Avos. He had a machlokus with the Chachamim on four dinim. One of those dinim was about a din involving a soita, and he said something which the other Chachamim considered disrespectful to Shmaya and Avtalion. They were arguing whether a Giyotis or a Shivcha Meshuchreres can drink the Meis Soita. He says no, they say yes. So they tell him there was an actual case of a Shivcha Meshuchreres that was given Soita water to drink, and he tells them, Drugma Hishkua, you know why they gave it to her? Because they were like her. She's a Giyotis, they also gave him. So they consider that disrespectful to Shmaya and Avtalion. So therefore, the Mishnah continues, they put him in Nidui. So then, Rabbi Yehuda continues in the Mishnah over there. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Chas v'sholem she'akavya ben Mahalalel nisnada. Chas v'sholem to say that Akavya ben Mahalalel was put in Nidui. She'ein azonan in Elos al kol onam b'Yisrael b'chochmo v'yirashchet ka'akavya ben Mahalalel. You should know that when the Azorah was closed on Erev Pesach, Akavya ben Mahalalel lived when the Beis Mikdash was still standing. So when the Azorah was closed, on Erev Pesach, there was nobody greater than Akavya ben Mahalalel there in Chochma and in Yirashchet, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda goes on to say it was actually somebody else who was put in Nidui who disrespected the Chachamim. By the way, why does he use such a funny expression? When the Azorah is closed, there's nobody like him in Chochma and Yirashchet. Marsha in Adias says over there the reason is because, after all, I mean, Akavya ben Mahalalel, he's not the Nasi, he's not the Av Beis Din, so you can't. What are you going to say? He's greater in Chochma and Yirashchet than them, than Hillel and Shammai, or whoever were the Nasi and the Av based in his times. So therefore, we use this expression. We said over here, the Jewish people are divided into three groups. Well, very well then. Suppose the Nasi belongs to one group, and the Avestin belongs to a second group, and Akavya ben Mahalalel belongs to the third group. Within his group, there's nobody greater in Chochma and Yirashchet. But we're not talking about the other two-thirds of the Jewish people. Anyway, the point is, so he uses the expression, when the Azorah is locked, Rava Mataritz, so it's Abaya Mataritz the Taimei, but Rava Mataritz the Taimei. Both Abaya and Rava can understand the wording that Rabbi Yehuda uses according to their shittas in our Mishnah. Abaya Mataritz the Taimei, he says it means, Ein Ba'azara, B'shosh, and Nina La'akol, Onam Yisrael, when the Azara was locked, B'derech Nes, and all or one third, whatever, of the Jewish people were in there, there was nobody comparable, B'chochmo, V'yerashchet, Ka'akave ben Mahalal. On the other hand, Rava Matayat Satame, Rava would explain according to his shita, Ein Ba'azara B'shosha Noel and Oisal Ko Yisrael B'chochmo V'yirashchet Ka'akavi Ben Mahalalel, when they, the Kohenim or Levim or whoever was in charge over there, would lock the doors of the Azara, at that time in the Azara there was nobody as great in Chochma and Yirashchet as Akavi Ben Mahalalel. So the expression Shenin Allah could mean either that it was locked by Derech Nes or that it was locked by the people in charge. Okay. We learn in a Braisa, it never happened, even though you had so many people coming into the Azara and bringing the Korbanos, it never happened that somebody got trampled and squashed over there. With the exception of one time, one Korban Pesach that was brought during the time of Hillel. At that time, one old person got squashed by the crowd. From then on, they called that Pesach the Pesach of the crushed one, because one person got crushed over there. It's brought in the Sefer Gilgul in Neshamas that this person was a Gilgul of the minister over there who you have in Aftorah, Parshas Metzorah, when Elisha says there's a siege and a famine going on in Shomron, and Elisha says in Nevuah that tomorrow wheat and barley are going to be very cheap. And this Sholish, this officer over there, makes fun of that. And then, and Elisha tells him, you're going to get to see the nest, but you're not going to get to eat from it. And sure enough, what happened was he was standing by the gate. He was supposed to be keeping order, and the people ended up trampling him. So the Sefer Gugul in Neshama says this person was a Gugul of that guy. He was brought back down here to earth, also at a time when there's a huge crush in the Azara. But he was feeling bad about it. What do you, so many Jews over here, I don't really like it. So therefore he ended up in the same way. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, Tanan Rabbanan, Pam Achas Bikesh Agrippa Samelach, Litin Eina Beuchlusa Yisro. One time Agrippa Samelach, he ruled over the Jewish people a couple of decades. There were actually two Agrippases, one who ruled about 30 years before the Churban and the other one who ruled closer to the Churban. We don't know necessarily which one it was over here. Anyway, one time he wanted Litin Eina Beuchlusa Yisrael. He wanted to get an idea of the size of the Jewish people. Amalei the Kohen Gadol. So he tells the Kohen Gadol, Tena Necha B'Psachim, pay attention to the Korbanos Pesach, and we'll get from that an estimate. Not a kulya mikol echad. So what they did is they took a kidney from each one. The kidneys are part of the emurim that have to be burned on the mizbeach, but they took a kidney from each korban. They ended up at finding over there, there were 600,000 pairs of kidneys, in other words, 1.2 million kidneys, kiflayim kiyotze Mitzrayim, which is twice as many as the number of Jews who left Mitzrayim, and that's not even counting, that's not even counting the Jews who were tomei or who were far away and couldn't make it for the Korban Pesach. So at the minimum, so you had 1.2 million Korbanos Pesach, the ein lechok Pesach or Pesach shall enim all of Yosem Asar Bnei Adam. Now, each Korban Pesach had at least 10 people registered for it, because practically speaking, you have to eat the whole Korban Pesach that night. You can't have very few people registered for it, otherwise you're going to have noiser. So each one had at least 10 people registered for it. So that means that that year, there were 12 million people there for Pesach. They called it, after that, they called that the Pesach of the thick crowds. Now, what it actually is that the usual word would have been merubin or something like that. They used the word merubin as like a play on words. Before we had Pesach me'uchin, where somebody was crushed. Now we have Pesach me'ubin, where there were huge, tremendous crowds. And maybe also they were mentioning with that nevertheless, Bashkach HaProtis, nobody got trampled or crushed. Okay. So the Gemara asks on this story, what do you mean not akul? What do you mean he took a kidney? Haboyak tura, what do you mean you have to offer it out of Mizbeach? The answer is the Hodem Makdulu. Okay, we mean he took the kidney and then he offered on the Mizbeach. The problem is, the Pasuk says about a korban that you have to offer it, meaning you can't mix the chelev or the emurim of one korban with another. So it can't just be that they have a pile of kidneys and afterwards they're going to go burn them all in the Mizbeach together. The answer is okay, so you don't do them all together, you burn them one by one. The problem still is, on the other hand, you have another pasuk that says that he should offer them. So that means all of them, all of the fats of one korban have to be offered at the same time. You can't do some now and some later. So how can they be taking a kidney and then later on they're going to be offering it? So so we don't mean they actually took the kidneys. We mean that he grabbed it for a moment he'll show it to the shliach, and then the shliach that Agrippa sent to take the census will then put down a bean or a stone to correspond to it, and then afterwards they counted up the beans or the stones. So they just used each time they'd pick up the kidney. The guy would put down one thing for his count, and then they'd offer it on the mizbeach. The shokum inayu, they'd take the kidney ad yavan lemidachrina until they give him something else, such as a pebble or a bean or something, and then eventually they counted those. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, Kohenim Omnim Shuris V'chola. The Kohenim are standing in rows, and we said that they have rows that are all silver bowls and rows that are all gold bowls, not mixed. So the question is, why? My timer, Ilema Dilma Shakli De Davo Ma'ili De Kaspa. Is it because you might have then that somebody takes a gold bowl and then returns a silver bowl? And you could argue that that's an example of Malin Bakodesh V'lemiridin. You have to go up in Kedusha, you don't go down. So if he takes a gold bowl and gives back to the Kohen next to him a silver bowl, then it's Meridin Bakodesh, is going down in Kedusha. Well, if you're going to argue like that, Hochanami, Dumas Shakli Bar Mosanum Aili Bar Meir, you could argue the same thing. Not necessarily even all the gold bowls. They weren't all the same weight and therefore the same value. You could have, for example, he ends up getting a bowl of 200 worth 200 zuz and giving back to the Kohen next to him one that's worth only 100 zuz, even though they're both made out of gold. So it's still Meridin Rakodesh. So that's not the reason. Ella de hochi shaper tfe. No, the reason is just because it looks nicer that way. When it's all one row of the same type, all gold or all silver, then it looks nicer. But there is an explanation. The Tosfos Rid gives a different explanation that, which is actually the Yerushalmi says something a little bit like this also, that what we mean is about the gold and the silver is that there might be a problem. Imagine you have, for example, a person gets a gold bowl and he tucks it away by himself, for example, and then says, I only received a silver bowl, and he passes a silver bowl to somebody else and he takes the gold bowl for himself. So the Gemara says that's not the reason, again, because you could say the same thing with different value bowls even within the same material. So no, it's just because it looks nicer that way. We said in the mission of Elayhoyla Bazichin Shulayim, we said that these Bazichim don't have flat bottom because you might put them down and then the blood will congeal. So Tanan Abanan, Kol HaBazichin Shem HaMikdash Elayhoyla Hen Shulayim, all the bowls that they use in the Bais Mikdash did not have bottoms for the same reason, because you don't want the Kohen to put it down and whatever is in them is going to congeal or get cold or whatever. Chutz MiBazicha Levoina Shalachem Aponim, except for the spoonfuls in which they had the Levoina that were on the Shulchan with the Lachem Aponim, those had to be flat bottom. If those had pointy or round bottoms, then when they put them down, they might lean against the lachem aponim and break it. The lachem aponim was, we know it had a very complicated shape and it was fairly delicate. So if the bazichin lean against them or fall onto them, then they could break the lachem aponim and that would make the lachem aponim possible. So those had flat bottoms. We said in the Mishnah, Shochet Yisrael v'kibbol ha-koyin v'chula. We said the Yisrael shecht, the koyin does the Kabbalah. So why do we say the Yisrael shecht? Lo yisagya d'lab Yisrael? What does it mean? Does it have to be a Yisrael? Anybody can shecht korbanos. The koyinim can also shecht him. The Gemara says, you're right. He gufa kamash v'lon. The Mishnah wants to inform us that very point, the shchita b'zor k'sheira, that the shchita is kosher even if it's done with a zor. It doesn't have to be. The shchita is the only avoda of a korban that can be done by a non-koyin. There is some discussion about the question, is there maybe more of a mitzvah for the owner of the korban himself to shecht it on the grounds that mitzvah bo yosim b'shluchai, or do we not apply that in that case? But whatever it is, it doesn't have to be that a kohen shechts it. That's the point. That's the point the Mishnah wants us to tell us. Not that it has to be a Yisrael, but that it could be a Yisrael. Then we said v'kibol ha-koyin. Then when the Mishnah continues that the koyin receives the blood, ha-kamash malon, v'kabola v'elach mitzvah kohuna, there the Mishnah wants to tell us that you should know that from Kabbalah and on, that's the parts that has to be done by the koyinim. We learn this from Pesukim, Rashi says, because the Pesuk says, v'shochat es ben ha-boker, that he should shecht it, and then v'hikrivu b'nei Aaron ha-koyinim es-adam. Then when they do v'hikrivu, where they offer the blood, the Gemara explains, this refers to Kabbalah. So therefore we see, and so by Kabbalah, it mentions b'nei Aaron, by shchita it doesn't. So therefore we see that the shchita can be done by anybody, but the Kabbalah has to be done by a kohen. Okay, then we said, noisne l'chaveroi, we said he gives it to the kohen next to him. Now, the question is, on the face of it, if the Kohen is giving it to the Kohen next to him and so forth until it reaches the Mizbeach, nobody is actually walking with this blood. So, Shamat Minah Hoylocha Shalai Beregel Habi Hoylocha, does that mean that Hoylocha is valid even if it's not done with actually moving the feet, which is in fact a machloikas in Zvachim? So whether Hoylocha just means that the blood has to reach the Mizbeach or whether a Kohen has to actually walk it over there. So from our Mishnah, it seems to show that you don't need to walk it over. It's enough that one kohen just passes it to the next one. The answer is Duma hu nayid purta. Not necessarily. Maybe what we mean is he moves a little bit. Now, who do we mean by he? I have a couple of explanations in Mefoshim. One is that it can mean the kohen closest to the Mizbeach moves a little bit. In other words, so the last kohen in the line is not standing right next to the Mizbeach. He's standing a couple of steps away, so that he has to take a couple of steps over to the Mizbeach. Therefore, halacha is being accomplished. And then he walks back a couple of steps and hands the bowl back to the next person and so forth. The other way of understanding it, some of the Mefoshim say, it means that all of them would have to move a little bit. So each kohen would have to shuffle his feet a little bit as he's handing the bowl to the next one. Okay. So the Elamai Kamash Malon. Well, in that case, we have to ask, what's the Chiddush? Now, obviously, the Mishnah over here doesn't have to tell us the whole procedure of bringing a korban. You have Masechta Zvachim for that. So it has to be that each phrase in the Mishnah is actually coming to tell us a chiddush. If it was that the Kohenim are not actually moving, then we would have a chiddush. It teaches us that halacha is valid, even just passing it without actually moving. But if you're saying that one or more of the Kohenim are actually moving in the process, then what's the chiddush? Why bother mentioning it at all? The answer is you're right. The Mishnah wants to tell us that it's a greater mitzvah, it's a greater honor to the Eibishter when more Kohenim are involved in the Avodah. So therefore, instead of having one Kohen walk or run back and forth with the blood, instead they would have many Kohenim participating in the Avodah. We said that Umachsus, or Kibbalah Samali Umachsus, we said each Kohen would receive the full blood from the Kohen next to him, and then he would pass back the empty one to that Kohen. Aval ipchaloi, meaning he wouldn't do it the other way around. He wouldn't first pass the empty one and then take the full one. Messiah, that Reb Shimon ben Lakish, that supports what Reb Shimon ben Lakish says. The Amr Reb Shimon ben Lakish, ein ma'avirin ala mitzvahs. You don't pass over the mitzvahs. So now, in this case, the receiving the bowl full of blood is part of the mitzvah because that's needed in order to bring it to the mizbeach and sprinkle it. The returning the empty bowl is only a machshir for the mitzvah. It's only preparing for the next mitzvah that now this bowl is going to be used again for the kabbalah of the blood of the next korban. So therefore, the actual receiving of the full bowl is the mitzvah, and therefore you can't be maver on that. You can't pass that over. therefore you have to receive the full one first. From this, by the way, we learn a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that's negea nowadays. That, for example, when you have two sifrei Torah, you don't first. Do Hagba and Glula on the first Sefer Torah, and then put down the second one. Rather, you put down the second one while the first one is on the bima. We learn this from this concept of Ein Ma'avir Na'al Mitzvahs. Another halacha also in connection with Kriyas HaTorah for that is that the Oyla doesn't leave the Bima right away. He stays by the Bima until the next Oyla is finished his Aliyah. For the same reason, in other words, because you should always have that you have two things over there. You have that, just like over here, we have it at some point, the Kohen is holding the full bowl and the empty bowl. So the same way over there, you have the first Sefer Torah and the second, and you have the previous Oyla and the current Oyla. Okay, and we'll continue with the description and the various dinim that we learn from it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. This, by the way, I mean, most of this description over here goes into when we say the Seder Korban Pesach every year. Most of this description goes into it. So now this gives us a little more insight into what we're saying at Pesach.